Memorial Day means serious savings at Sleep Outfitters. Save up to $1,500 store-wide. Tempur-Pedic and Sealy adjustable sets are now up to $500 off. Or get a King Purple mattress for the price of a queen. Plus, free next-day delivery and setup. And our exclusive lifetime price guarantee locks in your best price forever. The Sleep Outfitters Memorial Day Sale, going on now. You don't want to miss it. Only at Sleep Outfitters.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
RTE works remarkably well in practice, but does it work in theory? So wondered former Taoiseach Garrett Fitzgerald back in the 1990s, and readers of a new book by my next guest will find plenty of reasons to believe that the answer is no to both theory and practice. The book is called RTE, Saints, Scholars and Scandals, and its author, Shane Ross, is in studio with me. Shane, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat, and thank you.
Now, we better explain your voice. You've had a health scare.
Yeah, I got cancer last year, the year before last, and I had some fairly heavy chemo and radiotherapy. And so, you know, chemo takes no prisoners. It gets rid of the cancer, but it sometimes takes a few things with it, and it's done a bit of damage to my vocal cords, which are recovering, and recovering quite rapidly. But it's still there, and it'll be another few months. Mm.
They're a muscle, so the more talking you do, the better it'll become.
That's right, thank you. That's what the doctors say as well.
So that's why you're here today. Yeah. Now, talk to me about why you wrote this book. I mean, you've had a go at other institutions, like the banks, for instance.
Yeah.
Why RTE?
Well, it's interesting you should mention the banks. I mean, I suppose the three great untouchable icons, iconic institutions were the banks, the church, and maybe RTE. And I was always a bit unhappy about RTE. I had a bit of a complex about doing too much about them because my wife worked there and I thought she might lose her job if I did too much about them, which didn't happen. Ruth Buchanan. And I'd been very interested in them. For example, in the late 1990s, I was a journalist full time. And I sent a question into them, which was a very innocent one, which was, could you just give me the attendance at board meetings, of board members? And I got an absolutely outraged reply. This was absolutely none of my business. And they don't answer questions of that sort. And I thought that these guys must have something to hide. And I came across this kind of brick wall of RTE all the way through my journalistic career. And I'd always wanted to take an interest in them. Why now? Well, I was actually starting looking at them when the scandal broke in 2023.
You call it the Tubridy scandal, but I think it's the RTE scandal.
It's both.
Because these guys make the decisions, the people with the power.
Yeah.
Tubridy was, if you like, a victim in all of this.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he was part of it. He was certainly part of it, and he was certainly the face of it. And he certainly wasn't without wrongdoing himself, because he obviously didn't put his hand up when he should have done. And it became known as the Tubridy scandal, which I think annoys him a lot. And I think it's kind of justification because it got much bigger. The moment that the Tubridy issue, which was the issue of pay not being transparent, it opened up a whole litany of scandals within RTE, which weren't known about. It opened up the issue of the barter accounts. That's where the under the radar Tubridy money went, and it opened the barter accounts was a kind of secret what the Oireachtas senators and DDs called slush fund, which was operated by RTE. And once they got into that slush fund, they found all sorts of things which people will be familiar with. You know, all the flip flops and all that sort of thing. Soho Club in London, and that obviously comes out, and that led to other things like a Toy Show the Musical, payments of pensions to people who weren't entitled to them, and a litany of problems within RTE, which dated back to 1961.
You reckon it from the very beginning, because I would have thought that many of the people along the way who ran RTE would be really monuments to probity.
Some of them were, but some of them were asleep at the wheel. I mean, one of the main points of the book, which I've made, and its conclusion, which is no secret, is that the board got away. The board got away. The board were the people who were responsible for the ethics and the finances of RTE and the accountability of RTE. And when all this broke, not one single member of the board actually resigned as a result of the outbreak of these scandals, whereas other people did.
They've been cleaned out since.
They've gone since, certainly. They've gone kind of subtly. Some of them disappeared with giving, you know, health reasons, business reasons.
Now, the birth of RTE was political, was it not?
Very. I mean, Lamass said it was going to be basically a voice of the government. He didn't use that expression, but that's what he regarded it as. And he appointed political appointees, which were mainly Fianna Fáil. He gave a secure Fianna Fáil majority on it, and that continued for quite a long time.
The chair was Todd Andrews, who had run CIE and then was chosen to run RTE. And there's a kind of a circular thing here because Todd Andrews, the man who famously closed so many of Ireland's railways, is Ryan Tuberty's grandfather.
Yeah, he's Ryan Tuberty's grandfather. And he had a lot. They have a lot of relations within RTE, many of whom you know from your time there. And he was a great pal of Lamass's, as you probably know, and that's why he was appointed. In fact, Eamon Andrews was the first one, but he wasn't a relation of those Andrews's. But Todd was appointed because Eamon wasn't quite sound enough on the political issue, and he was showing signs of independence, and they put Todd in really to do the bidding of the government at the time. He hates to hear that being said, but that's what he did.
Now, even from the very beginning, Gayburn was a bit of a... an iconoclast, in a way. I mean, he cut his broadcasting teeth, really, in the UK, and it was more freewheeling than we were used to hear.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Gayburn was... you'd run him a pretty close second, Pat, okay?
Thank you.
At the moment, and you've got a long way to go. But he was the... As he was the kind of the foundation stone of broadcasting in television broadcasting anyway at that time, but he was rebellious. He was extraordinary because, and I cover a lot of things about him in the book which people don't know about and which I don't want to say because they won't read it if I tell it on the air.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, Todd Andrews had get rid of that effer burn.
That's right. He said get rid of that effer.
And had that succeeded, well, television and radio history might be very different.
Exactly. He said that. He said that to the Director General at the time, and the Director General said to just let him go away, and he went off on some other kind of hobby horse of his. But Andrews was very outspoken.
Now you talk about the politics within RTE. Now, it always struck me when I worked there that there was talk about the stickies, official IRA, official Sinn Féin, really, at the time, and whether people had Provo sympathies or sticky sympathies. And that was deemed to be political. And yet, if someone had Fianna Fáil sympathies or Fine Gael sympathies, that wasn't deemed to be political at all. That was deemed to be normal.
Yeah, I think there was a general kind of established media scare at the time that various people were sleepers and members of the Workers' Party and not confessing it. And that was true. That did happen as well. So there was a kind of group of people there who were very active politically and for the Workers' Party. And members, a couple of them were members of the Workers' Party at the same time, which they shouldn't have been. So that scared people and it certainly scared politicians from the establishment parties. And they were always pointing the finger at RTE and saying, look, these guys are stickies in there. And this was Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and there were no stickies in Leinster House at that time, so they were kind of real outsiders working underground and borrowing away at the media.
Now, the book is called Saints, Scholars and Scandals. We've adverted to some of the scandals, but there were money scandals. I mean, if you talk about Gay Byrne, and one of your preoccupations, it would seem, would be the star system and remuneration of stars.
Yeah.
But Gay was pretty poorly paid for most of his career until he was robbed, if you like, by one of your class. A financial man.
My class.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Someone from the financial world, Russell Murphy.
Correct. That was extraordinary. Now, Gay's pay actually kind of started. It was the start of it.
But he was so badly paid and he needed to recover from that. And that's what led, I suppose, to significant salary hikes.
Yeah.
Because where he went, others could follow.
Exactly. What happened with Gay was that they were frightened he was going to leave. And in fact, he got some very attractive offers from the United States after that scandal when he was robbed by Russell Murphy. And he got, I can't remember how much money he got at that particular occasion, but I think he got rapidly onto 500,000 a year, which was huge money at that time. And that set a bar. Now, I talked to John Soran, who you would know, Pat.
John Soran was the man who famously said, if Gerry Ryan left, that he could go over to the LNH and get a dozen Gerry Ryan.
Yes, I know. He was a controversial man. But he also said, we couldn't afford to let people not get this sort of money, including you, including Gay, because they disappear to England, and so they'd get what they asked for. And he said, in fact, he said to me when I was talking to him before he died last year, he said, if they'd look for more, this is for you, particularly.
Now they, you're telling
they
me.
They got it. So you should have been looking for more.
Now, the scandals and, you know, what I suppose the ultimate thing was when we had Dee Forbes as Director General, yeah, and all of that unfolded, and you had a piece, yeah, which is taken from the book, which was published in the Sunday Independent last week about the, yeah, disappearance of Dee Forbes.
Yeah.
But whatever about all of that saga and whether Dee Forbes was the appropriate person ever to be Director General of RT, given maybe a lack of an appreciation, given her private sector background, yeah, of the pressures, the stakeholders, if you like,
yeah,
the politics, the culture, yeah, all of that, and whether or not, anyway, we ended up where we ended up.
Yes.
And the problem is the future of RT. Where does that lie?
Well, I think there's been an awful sort of letting off of steam in the last few months, or year or two, in fact. And there was a very powerful and very good report written at the end of all this by Neve Brennan. And she suggested, I think, 90 changes and 90 amendments, and another report at the same time written by McGuinty. Those reports basically said corporate governance was a complete and utter mess within RTE. It pointed out the problems because of the board, the way the board was selected, because the way the board actually had absolutely no auditor on the board at one stage, which was crazy. They didn't know anything about finance. They had picked, I suggest in the book, the wrong chair and the wrong director general at that time. A director general who was, as you say, from the private sector, had no idea about public sector broadcasting, had never made a program of any sort. And then you had a chair, Moya Doherty, who was an absolute brilliant producer in the Riverdance sense, a real hero in that sense, but you didn't know anything about corporate governance. So it was a complete misfit in that role.
And yet she would have run her own company, or several companies, yeah, Allen Productions, Tyrone Productions.
Yes, you know, so it was a small company, but her record in there was in RTE, which is in the book, was actually deplorable in terms of corporate governance, and she didn't seem to be interested in it whatsoever.
She was ill also during a lot of this period.
She was ill, and I think I hope I've been very sympathetic about that illness. But some of the board committees that didn't sit, had they sat, and she was responsible for that, had they sat, the whole Tubridy issue would have risen much earlier.
Now, the question of what the government does now, the government is in the process of giving a significant bailout to RT, yeah, to allow it to make ends meet, to downsize, yeah, and so on.
Yeah.
Yet we can tell from here, for example, they're still recruiting apace.
Yes, I know. This is the extraordinary problem. I think a lot has been done. Sorry to give them the credit. A lot has been done on the government side. Kevin Backett's done. He's probably done the low-hanging fruit at this stage. What the problem here is, and you put your finger in it, is that they said this would be the last time, because everything was out in the open. They did get 740 million, right, as a result of this for the reforms. But what has happened, in fact, is there is, because it's politics, it's so into politics, it's another fudge. But there is another fudge.
I mean, the politicians emerge relatively unscathed. I can remember, you see, having been there for so long, unemployment is rising. Yeah. Tell all the semi-states, including RT, to recruit people, even though they might have nothing to do.
Yes.
And then suddenly they want to get a redundancy program in.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was politically driven. They were told what to do.
Politics has been the curse of RT from day one. I mean, you've got the Section 31 situation, which was all politics. You've got the board there that rebelled and was all sacked. And you've got, when I was in the cabinet, you know, there was visible and tangible hatred of RTE from various members of the cabinet. Every time you were on, you know, one of those programs lashing the government, they felt that not you particularly, but anybody in your type of position, they felt that they were anti-government and didn't want to give them a license fee rise.
Now, the subtitle of the book is Saints, a few of those, Scholars,
Yeah, there'd be a good
one or two.
There'd be a good few scholars on the board.
And scandals, but no sex.
And absolutely no sex in that in the book. Well, there might be a little bit, but very, very little.
Yeah, it's a huge book.
Yes.
Absolutely huge book. It's, what, over 300 and whatever pages long? Yeah, yeah. 400, over 400
it's
pages.
It's good value.
And it's available everywhere. Yeah. It's called RT Saints, Scholars and Scandals. And Shane Ross, its author, we wish you continued good health.
Thank you.
And your road to recovery, hope that is
thank
speedy.
You so much.
And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show. Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.